Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 30 years. Just flew back from Hawaii, got in at 2 o'clock in the morning. You may hear it in my voice, but there were high surf warnings all week, and I was in the midst of it, riding the wild surf in Hawaii. I'll tell you all about it coming up. But I'm so excited for today's show, because it's based on food. And you can only imagine the Clapper vision that I'm going to have for food. My guest at 7:15 is my favorite ribeye steak expert in Los Angeles. He's been in the meat business for over 40 years. His name is Dean Tribble, and he owns and runs Manhattan Beach Meats. Oh, if you want the best steak you've ever had in your life, that's where you're going to have to go. But it must be a field filled with nuances and skills to slice and dice. Trust me, it's not something that you just show up one day and know how to do. The eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. Can you imagine looking at the different choices and how to slice and dice and create the perfect steak from that? You have a different butcher and they make a mess. I've been shopping there for over 30 years, and I'm just so excited to have Dean Tribble be my guest today at 7:15. It made me think all week, where in sports, where in art, and certainly where in surgery, do you see this finesse of slice and dice? Well, in sports for me, growing up, the greatest running back I've ever seen was Barry Sanders. Nobody sliced and diced the defense like he did. But the dignity and the class with which he carried himself, his struggle with his dad, who he loved and knew who loved him, and yet at his Hall of Fame speech introduces him as, "I'm about to introduce the third best running back I've ever seen." Can you imagine this is what you got to deal with? It's a fascinating story, the story of Barry Sanders, as a slice and dice finesse running back, not a power running back, but a finesse running back in sports. And in art, 60 Minutes, one of the greatest all-time shows. Well, their star for many years, 40 years he was on 60 Minutes, from 1968 to 2008, was Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace was a guy in the art world who sliced and diced people up, from presidents to heads of industries. But sometimes you don't do a good job, and it's amazing to listen to him trying to interview the surrealist painter Salvador Dali. Talk about when slicing and dicing doesn't go well, when you don't have the skill set. It's going to be something music to your ears, actually. And in surgery, the first man to teach me how to do an elbow replacement, which we do in people with rheumatoid arthritis, that the arthritis just cripples their body. And there are patients I've done both their shoulders, both their elbows, both their hips, both their knees. Talk about bionic. But it's pretty tricky to do an elbow replacement. And the man who taught me how to do it in the 80s, Dr. Alan Ingalls, taught me how to dissect around the funny bone nerve, the ulnar nerve, so that you never inadvertently cut the nerve. The craziest thing he taught me, I remember it all these years later, 40 years later, is to take your scalpel when you're finally dissecting around the elbow and cut longitudinally the same plane that the nerve runs. Because if you take your scalpel in your dissection and go 90 degrees to the crease of the elbow, then you will inadvertently cut the nerve without seeing it. It's the craziest thing to cut on the nerve in its grain along it. But if you do that, you'll never cut it because you're going parallel to how the nerve is running. It's fascinating. So the skill set that makes the slice and dice is what today's topic is going to be. Clapper Vision, how could we not talk about the return of Dwight Howard? And it's a fascinating story to me as an orthopedic surgeon. of the back pain he had in Orlando, which ultimately was diagnosed as a herniated disc because of the radiating pain down his leg. You've all heard of sciatica. What exactly does that mean? Is that the same as lifting a heavy box and having pain in your back? It is. Because mechanical back pain is different. It hurts in your lower back, but when you start feeling it in your butt, in the back of your thigh, into your calf, into your toes, as it travels down the nerve itself, that's because of this clapper vision. Your spine is like a stack of Oreo cookies. The cookie is the bone, the cream filling is the disc. When you squeeze that Oreo cookie as hard as you can and the cream filling squirts out beyond the cookie, that's your disc going beyond the bone itself. And when the disc goes beyond the bone, what's living right next to the bone? The nerves that make up the sciatic nerve. And that's why you get radiating pain down your leg. There's nothing the matter with your leg. It's just the nerve way up in your lower back is what's being damaged. And this is what Dwight Howard had. And he had very successful surgery here in Los Angeles with the great Dr. Watkins. And he's ready to go. His back is great. It's a true success story. And I'm so glad that he's back to be able to redeem himself here in Los Angeles with the Lakers. And there is a real rumor, but it's not a rumor. At 8:15, I'm expecting one of the greatest basketball players of all time to call in, the great Clyde Drexler, to talk about the Big Three League, which he's the commissioner. So we'll talk about slicing and dicing. Nobody did it better than Clyde the Glide Drexler. So let's get into today's show right from the get-go. Barry Sanders, here's the rock and roll star, Kid Rock, talking about growing up in Detroit. Yeah, you didn't win many games, but you still went to the game because you got to see this guy. Curtis, there's no sound.
It was brutal being a Lions fan. So, but I will say this, that Barry Sanders, I mean, that was what kept people coming for a lot of years. So if there's football fans out there that never got to see Barry Sanders, you know, play the game of football live, there's no way to explain it. You can watch the highlights and stuff, but still just being there where you get the perspective of the whole field and, you know, watch plays developing and see the way that guy just cut and juke people. It was insane.
Cut and juke, slice and dice. This is what it sounded like when you were watching the game. Listen to the announcer go, there's the hole that he found, and then you could not catch him.
Pitch out to Barry, left side, hole, 35, 40, Barry on the run to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, look out, 30, they'll never catch him, see you later, touchdown, Lions, Barry Sanders, 68 yards.
Let's explore the story of a man who knew how to slice and dice better than anybody, but like most athletes, Clyde Drexler cut from his high school basketball team. Michael Jordan cut from his high school basketball team. When you hear the story of what makes you burn and drives you, it's mostly because in the beginning you were not greeted with a round of applause. You had to struggle. He had to struggle on many levels, on the field and at home. But in the end, that's what made him Barry Sanders. Curtis Martin, I'm a Jets fan from way back when. One of the greatest running backs I've ever seen, Curtis Martin. Listen to him talk about how special Barry Sanders was.
When I look at players like Jim Brown, at one time he was one of the biggest guys on the field. I think he would be different in today's game. Barry Sanders is a guy that no matter what year, you can say 1920 and you can say 2012, he will still be best running back in the NFL any given time.
So he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, Barry Sanders, the National Football League Hall of Fame, and he asks his dad, can you please introduce me? The dad says, sure, you're only the third best running back I've ever seen. Oy vey.
There was one person in Barry Sanders' life who did not think he was the best running back of all time.
First, I want to say hello to the greatest running back to ever live, the number one running back we ever lived. He's not with us today. I think he's with his family in Los Angeles, Mr. Jim Brown. So I want to say hello to him, Jim. I was supposed to have a 30-second speech. I'm going to make it quick. And now I want to introduce you to the third best running back to ever live, Barry Sanders.
Your own father thinking that. But you knew behind the scenes, he just was the proud papa of Barry Sanders. Here's Barry Sanders' brother, Byron, talking about growing up in that household.
Growing up and trying to understand, you know, why is he as hard as he is? Why is he so hard on us? There's no doubt about his motivation. I understand, you know, it was love.
Oh, my God.
I'm not talking about Coach Shepard at North High, but he didn't play him right. He didn't think Barry would ever be a great running back. He wouldn't play Barry running back.
And he would just lose it. He would be like, you know, GD, you know, these crazy coaches. You need to be running back. You know, they got these, you know, kids that can't run out of sight in a day. And, you know, he was going off on me. And I was just, you know, it's like, what did I do?
In high school, the coach has Barry Sanders and doesn't play him as running back until his senior year.
And what I remember about that year most is that I was really just concerned, not where I, you know, that I was playing out of position or anything like that. I was just concerned that I hadn't received any letters to go to college. And I was thinking, man, this is my junior year and I haven't received anything from anybody. You know, what am I going to do? At the start of the summer, going into my senior year, you know, I go to my dad and was kind of explaining to him that, you know, I really need to concentrate on working out this summer and getting ready to try to earn a scholarship. And he just looked at me like he always would, you know, no nonsense, and said, well, hey, son, you're working out is going to be working with me this summer. At that point, it was understood that, you know, when he needed me to work, that's what I did. The only thing is, you know, the pay wasn't that great. but in the end, it did pay off.
I got big, strong arms and big, wide shoulders because I never went to a gym growing up. My dad was a carpenter, strongest man I ever met, and he did everything. And I remember I must have been 12, 13 years old. Robbie, you're going to help me put a roof in on this house. These are 80-pound packs of roofing shingles. And if you carry them below your shoulder, you'll never lift them. This is how you do it. You swing the 80-pound bag over your shoulder. And you climb up the ladder to the roof. You can only imagine what Barry Sanders had to do that summer. You don't need to go to a gym when you're carrying 80-pound sacks of roofing shingles up a ladder, up a roof, where one false move, you fall off the ladder. It makes you strong, though.
You know, I was always at the game on Friday night. You know, I was that kid that was always here with my dad. And so now, after so many things that happened, I'm the starting running back at North High School. And not only that, but I'm having a career year at running back. I cannot even explain it to you. And for me, just being on the field, playing the game, that was where I was at home. That's you know, really all I wanted to do.
The first 3 years, they don't even play him as running back until a new coach comes in who finally sees that he has Barry Sanders, and he blows the roof off of the building of his senior year. But listen to the class of Barry Sanders when his coach says, you can set a record in this last game. Do you want to let the young kids play or you want to set the record? Listen to what the coach retells the story.
Last game of season, we were winning and we against Wichita East, and we knew we were going to make it to the playoffs.
It was me and another kid that year that was pretty much battling it out for the city rushing title.
Came off the field and I called him over and I asked him. I said, Barry, I can keep you in and you can rack up some yards. We can try to get that title, or I can put the young kids in. What do you want to do? He said, Coach, let the young kids play. There wasn't a second of hesitation from that young man. Let the young kids play.
At that point, because of all the great things that had happened for me, just was not that important.
Here's Thurman Thomas at Oklahoma State talking about Barry Sanders as a freshman coming to his school.
It was my senior year. We were playing, getting ready to play the University of Oklahoma. And Barry Switzer, who's the head coach at University of Oklahoma, says, whatever you do, don't hurt Thurman. I was like, oh, okay.
And they all looked at me like I was crazy. I said, you don't want to play against this freshman back that they have named Barry Sanders. Well, I'd never heard of Barry Sanders. I said, we have a tough enough time with Thurman, but you won't ever touch this kid.
You won't ever touch this kid. He has the greatest college career imaginable. Listen to these statistics.
it didn't take long for William to get on the bandwagon real quick.
Sanders had arguably the greatest collegiate season ever, setting 34 records. He rushed for 2,628 yards and scored 39 touchdowns in 11 games.
In 11 games. The epitome in sports of slicing and dicing. What about in art? How about when you're not good at slicing and dicing? Listen to Mike Wallace trying to interview the surrealist painter, Salvador Dali. Look up his painting. He painted it in 1934 called Persistence, 1931, Persistence of Memory, where you see these clocks melting in the desert sun. He's, as we call it, a mashugana. But Mike Wallace thinks he can lasso this guy in an interview and cut and dissect his guest, Salvador Dali. This is the opposite of Barry Sanders on a football field.
Good evening. Tonight, we go after the story of an extraordinary personality. He's Salvador Dali, the great surrealist painter who sees the world through surrealist eyes. If you're curious to hear Salvador Dali talk about decadence, death, and immortality, about his surrealist art, his politics, and his existence before he was born, we'll go after those stories in just a moment. My name is Mike Wallace. The cigarette is Parliament.
Yeah, they're advertising cigarettes.
Salvador Dali is a self-confessed genius with an ingenious flair for publicity. An internationally renowned modern artist, he's also designed fur-lined bathtubs, he's lectured with his head enclosed in a diving helmet, and he claims that at the basis of his ideas are, as he puts it, cauliflowers and rhinoceros horns.
All right, so just listen to this last bite.
Dali, first of all, let me ask you this. You're a remarkable painter, and you've dedicated your life to art. In view of this, why do you behave the way that you do? For instance, you have been known to drive in a car filled to the roof with cauliflowers. You lectured, as I mentioned, once with your head enclosed in a diving helmet and you almost suffocated. You issue bizarre statements about your love for rhinoceros horns and so on. You're a dedicated artist. Why do you, or why must you, do these things?
And here's his answer.
Because this kind of eccentricities correspond to the more important and the more tragical part of my life.
The more important and the more tragical part? I don't understand.
The more philosophical.
Well, what is philosophical about driving in a car full of cauliflowers or lecturing inside
because
a driving
because this car there...
We'll get into more of how not to interview someone, how not to dissect, how not to carve things in the world of art. In the world of sports, you want to be like Barry Sanders. But in the end, what you want is the skill set, the finesse of taking apart that piece of meat, finding the ribeye in the tomahawk steak. And there's no greater person to talk to, in my opinion, than my guest coming up next at 7:15. Well, it's beyond 7:15, Curtis. The great Dean Tribble from Manhattan Beach Meats. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. She's come undone, but guess who? That's what we're trying to do, is take something apart. And I'm joined today by a guy who knows how to do it better than anybody I've ever seen, the great Dean Tribble. Dean, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
It's amazing to compare you to Barry Sanders. And if the NFL was the meat business, you're the Barry Sanders.
I was flabbergasted when you made that comparison.
But listen, this is him cutting through the hole, dissecting the defense.
Pitch out to Barry, left side, hole, 35, 40, Barry on the run to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, look out, 30, they'll never catch him, see you later, touchdown, Lions, Barry Sanders, 68 yards.
Dean, teach us a little bit, okay? Not every piece of meat that comes into the butcher shop is the same. You have to see the defense, you've got to see that piece of meat, and you begin to start in your mind first, probably, dissecting where the fat is, where the marbling is, where the, right? Or am I wrong about this?
No, you're right. Every piece of meat's different, and you look for the quality, the color, a nice bright pink, not too light, mm-hmm. not real dark red, and a little flecks of fat throughout the meat, so it's evenly distributed. And then you just...
It takes time, though, right? It's like any skill set, and it's something that What I love about football is it's not only Barry Sanders running, it's how he can react to the defense. It's you got a sharp knife in your hand, but it's the meat. It's a two-way street. It's you as the surgeon, and it's you dealing with that piece of meat. It's both. You've taught so many people over the years. What is it that you look for in someone that you know, okay, he's going to be really, he or she's going to be really good at this?
Someone that likes people. You have to have good people skills. It's it's really, really important. Like at the store, I've waited on the same families for over 30 years. I'm waiting on their kids now.
Jeez.
And you develop a relationship with people.
Wow.
And that's one of the biggest things about having a small business is the family aspect.
Take us back to the beginning. Who started the business?
Well, that store's been there since 1912.
No.
Yeah. I think it's the oldest building in Manhattan Beach.
Wow.
And it was a grocery store. It was open-air market in the 30s. And then it was the store it is today in the 50s.
Mm.
And I was fortunate enough to buy it in 1992.
Mm.
And it had been kind of, the meat department had been kind of run down by then. And over the years, I got to build the business up. And I actually worked there in high school.
Wow.
For the Edwards. And that's who I learned the meat trade from. And we used to bring in whole carcass beef and a whole lamb and break them down.
Mm.
And
so let me ask you a question. When Michelangelo carved in marble, he had many choices of chisels to use, but he chose just three. The point chisel, which is the one you use to rough cut. They didn't have power tools or saws, but that was the point chisel to kind of get started on the big block. Then you had a claw tool to be able to create shapes so that you can make the deltoid muscles like Dwight Howard has in the figure you were sculpting. It had teeth on it like a fork, the claw chisel. And then you had the flat chisel so you can take off the bumps that the claw chisel made before you start polishing. What's the tools that you use when the carcass comes in and you get started? Take us through the different types of tools. I can tell you all the different tools I use in the operating room. What are the different knives like that you use in your business?
12-inch breaker, which is a pretty pretty thick bladed knife.
And where are they made?
Like a claw hook that you put. It was a wood yeah, piece of wood with a claw on it, and that's what you held with your offhand. And then you would break the beef, so you'd put it through the underneath the 13th rib and cut the
13th rib.
Yep.
Wow. And you're using, well, so where are the tools made? Switzerland, Japan? Where's the best knives made?
The ones we use were German. They were Forstners.
Mm-hmm.
That's what all the guys at the shop use.
Interesting.
The Forstner knife. And probably the knife that's used the most is a 6-inch boning knife.
Hmm. And how do you sharpen a knife the best way?
Well, we have a stone. It's a whetstone, so it uses a little bit of oil, and it has a fine, medium, and a coarse.
Mm-hmm.
So you start out with the coarse, and then you use the medium. And we don't use the fine too much unless you really need something that's really, really sharp. But it doesn't hold, the blade doesn't hold that long.
How often do you need to sharpen? You start your day, every day you come to work, by sharpening your knives, or you assume
like every
sharp?
Other day.
Every other day.
Yeah.
Huh. And how many guys have you trained over the years?
Oh, God. more than I can count. But I can tell you that I have two guys that have their own shops now. One of them's up in Tahoe, and then another guy is local, and I have like three guys that manage big grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, I've had the opportunity to pretty much let Jacob Walsh and my son Brian run the shop now. So,
you know, when I walked into the shop and I saw your son, and I said, you know what? I've been coming here so long. I've been talking about on the radio for 8.5 years. I've been on the radio. I said, it's time. I want to talk to you guys on the radio. And it was beautiful. Unlike Barry Sanders and his father, for your son to say, then you have to talk to my dad. He'd be the perfect person.
Yeah.
And it was really a beautiful thing to have him defer and give me yourself to be able to call you. It was a proud moment for me on your behalf.
Well, I'll tell you, I can never... could never believe that I would be on the radio with you. It's just,
well,
I think my wife's more excited than I am, though.
You have a skill set, and I think it's interesting for people to know about it. It's not like just anybody can do it.
It's kind of a lost art now, though, I'll tell you. It is
a lost art. Everybody wants to go to law school, but nobody really wants to do jobs that actually make a difference.
Yeah,
you know? And what you do makes a difference,
in my opinion. It's been fun. I mean, you know, the funnest part is the customers and getting to know, I mean, you know, hundreds of people by first name. Yeah. And it's nice to go into a little place and have somebody call you by name.
Yep, yep. Tell us about Hibachi, the restaurant near the pier that went out of business, became a
Rockin'
Fish.
There was a little...
How did you get the teriyaki recipe?
Yeah, well, one of them is theirs, and there was a guy by the name of Frank Nam, mm-hmm. and he owned this little place, and they used to have a little restaurant in the back, and then you could order a burger out front. It was like a little beach place. Mm-hmm. And he had this teriyaki sauce. And when I worked there in the 70s, he used to sell it to us in a little jar, and we would just dip stuff in it. And then so I played with the ingredients over the years, and I was at a different – I had a different business in Manhattan Beach. It's gone now. Mm-hmm. But I developed one with brown sugar mm-hmm. that we used to marinate everything in now. And his, when they finally sold that, one of the guys gave me the recipe, and it was it's a white sugar-based teriyaki sauce.
Mm.
And I have one lady in Atlanta that every year for her husband's birthday, she calls, and we ship her the teriyaki skirt steaks.
Let me tell you something. That stuff is like liquid crack. And the ribeye steak, and you put it in a Ziploc bag and let it marinate and let it be room temperature and grill it. Dean Tribble, I'm telling you, I close my eyes and I can see heaven.
You can what?
I can see heaven. I hear the music.
Well, you know what's funny that you love the ribeye? If you ask 9 out of 10 meat cutters, they'll tell you the same thing. The ribeye is the best steak.
Well, you have the best one. Dean Tribble, I know it was early to get you up, and I'm going to keep talking about it all day long. You're the Barry Sanders of the meat business, and thanks so much for making time to come be with us.
Thanks, Doc.
Okay.
Have a great
soon.
Day.
Manhattan Beach Meats, the great Dean Tribble. All right, coming up next, the clinic will be open. We'll do some clap revision. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. It's all about the meat. It's all about the beef. Manhattan Beach Meats, Dean Tribble. What a great place. Treat yourself. It's not cheap, but nothing worth anything is cheap. Do me a favor. Tell him you want what Dr. Clapper gets. Get a ribeye steak, a big Ziploc bag, and pour some of that homemade teriyaki sauce in it. Put it in the refrigerator. Let it marinate, but about an hour before you put it on the barbecue, take it out of the refrigerator. Let it be at room temperature. Oh, my God, is it the greatest meat you'll ever eat. All right, the number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Kathleen in Las Vegas. Kathleen, are you really in Las Vegas?
Yes, I am.
Wow. What do you do for a living?
I'm a manicurist here, and I'm a mother and a grandmother.
Really?
I'm a 70-year-old woman.
Where'd you grow up?
Had an injury.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New Orleans.
You did? Wow.
Yes, I did.
Was your mom a good cook?
Pardon? Oh, my mother's an excellent cook.
What was your favorite thing that your mother made?
Oh, she made gumbo, which was awesome. Anything she cooked was French cooking, so different roast or etouffee.
Wow.
Goodness, just anything.
All right, just
you didn't even have to go to a...
Quickly just tell me right now, you close your eyes, what are the ingredients in a gumbo?
Gumbo, the main is the okra. That's what you want to always have in your... You want some sausage, you want shrimp, you want some crab meat.
Wow. Is there rice in it?
With a roux, of course.
Is there rice in the gumbo?
You put rice, you put the gumbo on top of rice at the end.
Oh, wow. So it's a whole sequence of events, huh? And does it cook all day long?
All day long.
And the whole house smells from it.
The whole house smells so good.
I've been to New Orleans, man. It's just the greatest.
Have you?
Yep. And you can't get those crawdads. You can ship them here on an airplane, but something happens at 30,000 feet. You got to eat them in New Orleans, I think.
It's from the Gulf. Everything from the Gulf, the seafood, and also the water in New Orleans. With even making the French bread and everything, you just can't get it like you can get it in New Orleans. They can try, and they get it, you know, close, but it's just not the same.
And I love the donut, the beignets. You cannot get them in Los Angeles.
No, you can bring them home and try to fix them here, but they're just not the same. Like I said, I think it's that bad water there or whatever it is.
All right, young lady, how can I help you? What happened to you?
Well, first of all, I just want to tell you, my son has just told me I had to call you. He thinks you're just a genius.
Oh.
And he wanted me to find out a direction, what to go in with what I just found out.
Okay.
A report, I had a CT scan done, and it showed I had a skiing accident about 3 months ago. And it was pretty bad fall. What happened was they said I have a left sternoclavicle joint with a small hematoma surrounding the clavicle, and it's an effacement and luminal narrowing of the innominate vein. I feel like someone has their hands on my throat all the time.
Did you crash on an outstretched arm? How did you fall?
My left arm went kind of under me, and I hit my head really hard. So my left arm kind of went under. Nothing broke. Nothing at all broke. And I hit so hard that that clavicle in, and I had no idea what was wrong, but this thing about feeling around my throat always, and just still a tenderness on the breast area right there, the clavicle, I just thought, I better go get a test done, and I did, and that's what this showed, but the orthopedic told me I would never, ever have a surgery on this because of the, you know, how risky it would be to do it. I don't know what to do. I don't know what, is there repercussions of later of just letting it be, living with it. I thought maybe you could send me in a direction or...
I can.
Or
I can help you.
Can you?
It'll be my pleasure. You've never listened to the show before, so you don't have any idea what clapper vision is, do you?
I don't.
All right, well let me teach
you. My son does.
Let me teach you a little bit in honor of your son. First of all...
Okay.
Why did God even give us a clavicle? What is the purpose of the collarbone? And here's the answer. Your ball and socket joint, your shoulder joint, is actually only capable of taking your arm. Let's pretend you're standing straight up and your palm of your hand is touching your thigh. That shoulder joint, ball and socket joint, is only capable of bringing your arm out to the side to shoulder height. In other words, 90 degrees. That's all it can move. But how the hell do you get your arm to go above your head? If you want to comb your hair or wash your hair or reach for something, the cornflakes in the cabinet, how do you go beyond 90 degrees? Well, that's why we have a shoulder blade, and that's why we have a clavicle. Because the shoulder blade, after 90 degrees, you put your arms straight out. If someone were to feel your back to lift now higher than 90 degrees, you would feel the whole shoulder blade rotate on the rib cage. The clavicle also moves. So in other words, your ball and socket joint is mounted with your scapula, your shoulder blade, and the clavicle away from the rib cage so that you can now have clearance to get another 90 degrees so you can go 180 degrees with your arm. Do you understand? The joint can only go to 90, but because you have a collarbone and because you have a shoulder blade, you can now rotate the whole unit another 90 degrees. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so the connection, the buttress, the connection of the collarbone to your breastbone, your sternum, is a joint. That's the sternoclavicular joint. And there's a small joint between the tip of your shoulder and the clavicle called the AC joint or the acromioclavicular joint. These are ligaments. They're not really joints like your knee joint or your hip joint, but there's a little synovial fluid in there, but they're really tight, strong ligaments that combine these two bones together. Here's another clap revision. You know, a yellow pencil has an eraser, right? How do you get the eraser to stay on top of the yellow pencil? You've got that metal wrap around the eraser and the wood that holds the eraser on the pencil circumferentially. Well, you have that material, even though it's a ligament, that's wrapping around the eraser and the pencil that allows the clavicle bone to be wrapped tightly to the sternum, the breastbone. It's the same kind of thing. And what you basically have done is you've taken your left hand's holding the pencil, your right hand's holding the eraser, and you are now pulling the eraser either forwards or backwards. Capiche?
Yeah.
So you have ripped that metal part of a pencil that holds the eraser to the pencil. That's a clap revision. So now I've painted a picture in your head and you understand. Here's the problem, Kathleen in Las Vegas, that sitting deep to that clavicle, that collarbone, is the subclavian artery and vein. And these are the main pipes that come out of your heart that allow you to make a left turn and a right turn of the artery and vein to go either down your arm or up your neck into your head to feed your brain. So that connection of blood vessels is the key. You do not need an orthopedic surgeon like me to guide you. You know what you need? A vascular surgeon. And again, I agree with the New Orleans orthopedic surgeon. This is an area you want to leave alone unless you cannot live it anymore. You know, Dr. Clapper, I can't sleep at night. I am so uncomfortable, which it sounds like you are after 3 months. But the person to meet with is a chest surgeon, is a thoracic surgeon. And that's where you're going to need to go on your path. That's the person who can help you. And I, again, would agree with the orthopedic surgeon in New Orleans. You know, if you have any opportunity to not touch this, the risks are almost not worth it. But if the vascular surgeon says, Kathleen, you have really compromised the flow of the blood through that vein or artery, that's a different story. But they're the ones that are the best at it. And they deal with the sternum. They deal with the clavicle because when you do open heart surgery, they take a saw just like I use and they'll cut through bones. So they're not uncomfortable. But this is not the job for an orthopedic surgeon. This is the job for a vascular surgeon. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Would you suggest any, like a physical therapist helping me stretch or anything with...
Say that again. I didn't hear you.
Would you suggest me going to like a physical therapist right now?
Here's what I would say. Information, Kathleen, empowers us in life. Okay, I'm a surgeon.
Uh-huh.
I'm a surgeon. But that doesn't just because I do surgeries all the time, 500 of them a year for 30 years. I'm a busy surgeon. But you always want to try to avoid surgery. I get that. But you, before you even make any decisions, you need information. What exactly is the right thing to do? So my next chess move for you, if I was taking care of you, is Kathleen, here's the name of my favorite vascular surgeon. I want you to go see him or her and see what they say. Then you can think about physical therapy. Then you can, but you need information first. That would be my advice.
Okay. Do you have a suggestion of someone? Because I was planning to come see you. I was going to come see you.
There's a guy at Cedars named Clark Fuller. Go see him. He's a great vascular surgeon, thoracic surgeon. Clark Fuller knows his business, and he will be able to guide you. He's at Cedars, and your son will know how to get a hold of him.
Boy, thank you so much.
Kathleen, I want you to do me a favor. I just helped you, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I want you to find a total stranger today, someone you never met before, and do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Oh, I tell you, I love doing that. Thank you so much.
All right, God bless you, and have a good day today.
I bless you, too.
All right, thank you. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. And coming up next, the lines are lit up. Hang on the line. Larry, Frank, Steve, Joe, I'll get to you, all of you. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA. Don't let the old man in. Toby Keith. What a story this is. How he met Clint Eastwood, 88 years old, having lunch with him. All right, Toby, it was nice to meet you, Clint Eastwood said, but I got to go. He goes, you're 88 years old. Where the hell are you going? I'm making a movie called The Mule. Toby Keith said, you're 88 years old. You're Clint Eastwood. What are you doing so much with your life still? And Clint Eastwood said to him, I just don't want to let the old man in. He said, I went home that night. I wrote this song, Don't Let the Old Man In. It's amazing. I hope when I'm 88, I'll still be on the radio. Curtis, you'll be on Medicare by the time I'm 88 years old as well. All right, Warriors, let's go to Larry in Los Angeles. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Larry. What do you do for
a
living?
Two questions.
Before we do that, what do you do for a living?
Well, I am a retiring attorney.
Oh, no.
Yes. I know that's not one of your favorites. But
No. Listen, there's nothing better than a good attorney when you need one. And you're a good attorney, Larry.
Well, I hope so. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Where'd you go to college? Where'd you go to law school?
You might find this interesting. I went to law school at Columbia.
No way!
Yeah, you were just a baby in 1967.
Oh, my. You were there when Mark Rudd was there with the riots.
Hey, how about that? I was in that, sit-in, 68.
Best eggplant pizza in America is at V&T's. Did you eat there?
I sure did. Is that on Amsterdam?
Yep, right next to the Hungarian pastry shop. Did you eat there?
No, I didn't, but I did live on 110th between, at Brother Harmony Hall.
So you remember the church, St. John the Divine?
Oh, I sure do. One of the biggest in the world, right?
Right. Beautiful. And on the top of that church is a sculpture of Gabriel blowing his horn. You know who made that sculpture?
I think I read it at some point, but I don't remember. Who made it?
Gutzon Borglum, the same man who carved Mount Rushmore. He made the Gabriel blowing his horn on top of St. John the Divine on 110th Street and Broadway where you went to law school. That's amazing.
No kidding.
All right, Larry, how can I help you? What's up?
Well, I had a gradual pain in my knee initially, and then subsequently it started to get gradually in my right hip.
Mm-hmm.
And I had x-rays recently, and it was diagnosed. The knee is, but I probably am not pronouncing it correctly, but osteoarthritis.
Osteoarthritis. Right osteo means bone, arthritis. Arthros in Latin means joint. Itis is inflammation. Is it on the same side, the hip and the knee pain?
Yes.
All right, you got to be careful, Larry. You got to be careful. There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Hips.
Okay.
I also wrote one with her called Heal Your Knees. But on page 50 of the Heal Your Hips book, you'll see there a whole section about people who think they have knee pain, and people will operate on their knee when the reason for their knee pain is coming from the hip. And that's because the quadriceps muscle in front of your thigh originates from in front of the hip. So you better, and those folks who have a bad hip and bad knee on the same side, you actually should take care of the hip before you touch the knee because you may not have to touch the knee. So do not let them give you cortisone shots, stem cells, PRP, or any cockamamie shots or pills. Stay away from the drug companies if you can. You want to be holistic, Larry. So get the book and do the pool exercises, and I'm more than happy to help you.
May I ask you quickly? People have been telling me about this CBD oil, and do you have anything to say about that? Does that relieve pain or does that
It does. It has anti-inflammatory qualities to it, and I think it's an excellent thing that you can try. But here's the thing, Larry. You're a smart man. You went to Columbia. Don't give me Robitussin if I'm coughing because I got pneumonia. If you want me to stop coughing, you better give me antibiotics to stop coughing, not Robitussin. You don't want to just treat the symptom. So, yes, CBD oil, fine. Helps with inflammation. But you got to ask yourself the question, Larry. Why is it inflamed? Because I got bone-on-bone arthritis? Then you better fix that before you smear all kinds of cockamamie things on me.
Capiche? And the same would go for meloxicam, some sort of pill.
Yeah. Why would you want side effects for your heart and other things? Go after the root of the problem, not the symptoms.
Final question. Is chiropractic help of any value?
I love chiropractors, and most orthopedic surgeons don't say things like that. But I grew up, my dad was a carpenter. I have no idea what the chiropractor in Far Rockaway did, but he helped my father. And I have warm place in my heart for whatever he did to my dad. Now, if you meet someone who says they can cure diabetes with chiropractic manipulations, you better run. But there is a beautiful place for a chiropractor in the scheme of things when someone is injured. You know what I mean? Everybody needs to know the benefits, and there's nothing better than someone who's really good at what they do. However, you need a diagnosis. You need information, and you got to be careful who you go to, and that includes any doctor. But, yes, I love chiropractors.
Okay, thanks, Doc. I know you're very busy. I have to talk to you forever about New York City, Columbia, and a lot of other
Well,
things.
Then, Larry, why don't you make sure you call back? I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care, and appreciate all the good work you do, man.
God bless you, Larry. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I'll do that. Take care,
all right, man. All right, God bless. All right, we'll take a break. Coming back, I'm going to tell some stories. Thank God I got the great Curtis Poindexter here today. Steve Paulette pulling the sound bites. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.